This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Waterfront Film Festival co-founder Hopwood Dupree tells us about the organization's new permanent home in Holland. But first, the Citizens Research Council of Michigan has a new report on local government finances and services. The public policy research organization says the financial condition of many local governments has remained precarious since the recession of 2007, and that several budgets have persistent structural problems. But the report also says that there are opportunities to fix those issues, mainly through county governments. Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. He joins us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. Eric Lufer, thank you very much for being with us.
Gordon, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Let's start off with the problem that you're getting at here. Why is it that tax revenues for local governments have really not come back since the recovery which followed the recession in 2007?
So Michigan, over a number of years, has put in place a number of constitutional and statutory limitations to protect taxpayers from escalating property tax burdens. When they did that, I don't think anybody could have foreseen what we went through with our, what we call the Great Recession, this last recessionary period, where property values declined as far as they did for some governments. And the limitations allow property values to free fall down, but they limit how fast they can go up. And this has created a very, as you say, precarious situation for a number of our cities, our charter townships, our bigger governments, especially those with industrial property. And now they're trying to figure out how to provide the services that the residents and the businesses want that reside within their confines. And it's not an easy proposition. There just isn't enough money to do what they've always done. So either find new money or find new ways of doing what they've historically done.
And the structural issues that you mentioned, are those the things in the Michigan Constitution, or are there other structural issues which have prevented local governments from bouncing back from the depths of the recession?
So the constitutional limitations are a big part of it, but they're not the only part. Our local governments have benefited over the years from revenue sharing that comes from the state. This was a way of diversifying the revenue structure for local governments. Beyond the property tax, now they could benefit with economic activity in the form of sales tax revenues, income tax revenues, business taxes, things like that, that the state would collect and send back to local governments. Well, since the state was having its own budget problems, it diverted that money for their purposes, and local governments have gotten less. At the same time, a lot of our cities, a lot of our counties have had to deal with what we call legacy costs, the pension and the promises for health care for retirees, and those are putting an increasing strain on municipal budgets. So it's kind of a, you know, use the cliche of a perfect storm, that a lot of these things coming together at the same time that are really making it difficult for our local governments to continue to provide the services their residents are accustomed to.
So why do you think then that a more regional approach where counties might work with some cities, townships, villages, et cetera, on these issues, why might that be the way that perhaps we get better services, save money, or maybe some of both for local governments?
I've been doing this now for 30 years, working with local governments. And as I go out and talk to people, talk to businessmen, talk to critics of our government structure, that two common threads that you hear from the other people, this isn't necessarily my complaint, but that we have too many units of local government working in their own silos, and that local government does not operate enough like business. They don't do the types of business things that businessmen do to try to maximize profit and minimize cost. And so what we're trying to do is overcome some of those things. We know from past experience that there's little appetite at the local level to eliminate units of government. We've tried that in Genesee County with Grand Blanc. We tried it up in Manistee County with Enekama Township and Village. And just a year and a half ago with Saugatuck and Douglas, the question of putting two cities into one. When it comes to the people asking them this, they're not interested. So What if we just blew up the way we're thinking about local governments and created a new structure and really looked at what businesses do? Now, when McDonald's opens a franchise, they don't tell that franchisor, you're going to have to deal with your own PR and human resources and all those types of things on your own. You benefit from the corporate structure. And that's true with Sears and Roebuck or Starbucks or who have you, that there's a benefit to having a larger structure, and the storefront only has to worry about providing services or providing a product to the people coming in. So what if we took that structure and put it in our local governments? Now, instead of having 1,800 units of government, we can have worry about 83 counties being the provider of back office services, being the provider of key services for public health, for public safety, what have you. And now the cities and townships can worry solely about making their communities attractive places for people to live and work. You're able to achieve economies of scale where you have people, because of their training, that command a higher wage, and now you're spreading their services over a wider population. And we find that there's other things that go with this. We have a revenue problem. We just talked about that. If at some point we decide that part of their solution, part of the solution, not the sole solution, but part of the solution is to allow local governments to levy different types of taxes, we need to do that on a regional level. We can't have every township and every city levying sales tax or an income tax or a gas tax or what have you. The administration of it, the confusion of it would be overwhelming. But if it were done at a county level or at an even bigger regional level, then that would make a lot more sense, would minimize the confusion. But then now you have to align the service provision with where the revenue is coming to. And so our rethinking the local government service delivery helps to move along that path.
Specifically, are there other taxes that you're thinking of that counties could levy? I mean, you gave a couple of examples there, but are there other ones that you think that it might make sense to at least allow counties to have the option of levying certain types of taxes?
So part of what we did in putting together our report is look at what other states do, and you find very few states that are as restrictive as Michigan is in providing options to local governments. And when you look at the other states, almost every other state allows a public utility tax at the local level. Only the city of Detroit is allowed to do that in Michigan. Many of the states allow local option fuel taxes, local option motor fuel taxes, local option alcohol or tobacco taxes. Many, many states offer local option sales taxes, and we have some constitutional issues we'd have to overcome here, as well as local option income taxes. We allow that to our cities, and 22 Michigan cities do that now. And part of the problem in allowing it to the city level is now it's created a greater disincentive to come into the very places that we want to revitalize, whether that is Detroit or Muskegon or Flint or Saginaw. The cities that need the revenue the most are creating an extra burden for people to come in. So if it were at a regional level with a local option regional income tax, that would make a lot more sense than an income tax at the city level.
You mentioned a while back that there have been proposals over the years to consolidate governments. Most recently on this side of the state was the Saugatuck and Douglas proposed merger, which the Citizens Research Council actually filed a report on that spelled out a lot of savings that were possible, and yet the voters there rejected it. Could you run into some resistance here as well, that there may be citizens as well as maybe government officials who are reluctant to cede that turf to a countywide authority?
Yes, very clearly that there has been pushback before and there will be pushback in the future. So what we tried to do with our report is not to say that our legislators in Lansing need to make a bunch of changes that's going to affect how all of our local governments operate, but instead say, here's some ideas for doing things different, and it needs to be come from the bottom up. We need our local governments to think about what they're doing and how they could do it different, and therefore sort of self-germinate. So they're going to find things that work best for them, And we know they're going to sort of start with the low-hanging fruit and do harder things over time. We also think that if you start with a lot of the back office stuff, frankly, I have no idea who was the accountant for the city I live in. It just doesn't concern me. As long as there's a good accounting and the city books are balanced at the end of the year, I'm happy. So whether that's done by a city employee, by a contract employee, or by the county on the city's behalf, human resource functions, accounting functions, assessing functions, you can go on a lot of things that happen at the city and township level that affect how that government operates, but it doesn't affect me. I'm concerned whether the police show up when I call 911, the fire department sprays water on my house if it's on fire, the parks, the grass is cut and the equipment is safe, garbage gets picked up, all those types of things affect me. And there's a whole bunch of things that can happen behind the scenes to facilitate that. And the average citizen probably doesn't know or care how that happens.
So you mentioned human resources, you've mentioned accounting. I mean, how far could this go? Could you have a county-wide police department? Or will there be counties where you have a city that's so big, like, Wayne County, and you have Detroit, and there are certainly other examples you could look at, Kent County with Grand Rapids, where maybe those cities are big enough that it does require them to have their own police department?
I don't think there's any government that's so big that it would preclude it from participating in something like this. And I don't think there's any government service that is so important that it wouldn't fit into this model. So imagine instead of 1,500 or 1,000 different police departments, I don't know what the number is, but there's a fair number of them. Imagine we had 83 police departments. And in the county of Kalamazoo, you had one police department. It would be the county sheriff. They could still position the same people on a regular basis in Kalamazoo, in Portage, in the townships that have the population to warrant it, maybe just one or two in some of the least populated townships. But by having a single police department, now you've created savings in the back office operations that take place. The 911 would be centralized. You would create savings in having a single, the sort of CSI and the drug enforcement and stolen car enforcement, a lot of different specialty things that go on in more metropolitan areas. And if you wanted to have police cars in the city of Kalamazoo that were painted brown and the officers wore brown uniforms, fine. They'd still be county sheriffs. They would still get paid by the county. If they wanted to be blue in Portage and some other color in Comstock Township, we could live with that. It's really how it's being paid for and how you've achieved the savings that are important part. And you can put a whole lot of window dressing on to help the people know that these are the police that care about them, that are serving them, and they're part of the community. I think we could take this and make it work for just about every service that is a cost driver for local government.
But you do say in the report that it's important to give flexibility, that what works in, say, Wayne County may not work in a county in the Upper Peninsula. If you look here in Southwest Michigan, Kalamazoo County is quite different from, say, Cass County, which is right nearby. So is the idea here that you're giving counties options of different ways that they could do finances, of raise money, and also provide services?
Yeah. Again, we're under no illusion that this is going to happen overnight, that counties are going to see a bright light in the sky and all be persuaded at the same time to do things different. So if it's going to be generated at the bottom level and sort of work its way up as opposed to coming from Lansing and being dictated down, it's going to require the local communities to find the things that work best for them, to build on those and then expand them to the next service and the next service. So when you look at a Oscoda County that has no cities or villages in it, it is all townships, the dynamics are going to be a whole lot different than a Kalamazoo County or a Wayne or Oakland County, where cities predominate and sort of the population center and the service delivery center. It creates a whole different dynamic and a whole different give and take, the politics of it. So it's not that it couldn't work the same in all 83 counties, but because we're going to provide options and we call upon the local governments to start thinking outside the box of new way of doing things, that's where the options need to come in.
How much difference does it make in terms of how a county's governance structure is set up? And do you see some changes that might have to be made there in state law or even the state constitution in order to make all of this work?
This is where we get into the real wonky stuff. We have in our state laws three different structures for county government to operate under. 79 of our 83 counties operate under what's called the general law. And there, the state has established a law that says how many commissioners there will be and that there will be independent sheriff's office and register of deeds and so on and so forth. And the state law dictates what those counties are authorized to do. In the 1963 Constitution, there was provision for what we call a charter county. Like a city establishes its own charter to become a home rule city, counties were now authorized to do that. And it creates a lot more latitude for the counties to look at the needs of their residents and mold their county structure to fit those needs. It gives them a whole lot more latitude to reduce the number of commissions and boards and task forces and everything and really consolidate the power. And now you have an elected executive at the lead, like you in a city, you would have a mayor. In the state, we have a governor. So let's do that at the county level. And there's sort of an in-between, what's called an optional unified county. So we have 79 general law, Wayne and Macomb County are charter counties, Oakland and Bay County are optional unified county, and the optional unified is sort of bridging in between. Each of them has a county executive. Each of them have been able to achieve some savings and reduce some commissions, but they don't have as much latitude as the charter county. So why is this important? Well, if you're operating under a general law, as I said, there's restrictions on what the county can do, and there's much less latitude to respond to the needs of the residents and sort of mold the county operating structure to do some of the things that we're saying could be done differently. We also find that it's very important to have somebody at the heads, you know, the sort of the George Washington leading the way across the Delaware, that somebody's got to be in charge. And when you have the general law county, you have a commission and everyone's in charge and no one's in charge. They elect a president of the commission or a chair of the commission. That person is still only answerable to the district that that elected them. So when you get an executive, it's a countywide election, and at least 51% of the people said this is who we want leading us. So to have a vision, to have somebody in charge saying, let's do things different, let's lead the charge.
So does that mean that all 83 counties should have an elected county executive?
I don't know that they all need an executive. One of the options that's available, there's limitations on its availability now, but we could amend the law to allow for a county administrator. Many of our counties already have an administrator. It's kind of akin to a city having a city manager. You might have a mayor and a manager. Some have a less weak mayor, and the manager's really providing the steering the ship, you know, to the day-to-day operations. We could do this at the county level. The trade-off is if that is a politically volatile person or position, that person might not be as willing to put their neck out on the line and do things different. There's a lot of politics in it, and I don't know that there's a one-size-fits-all. I do think having 79 counties clinging to this general law form of government is being stuck in the 1850s as a structure that fit then, and it's, you know, 2017, it's time to modernize and do things different. And there's a lot of options that are out there to try to adapt to the times.
And do you think that local government leaders are receptive right now to these ideas because of what you've spelled out, that they're perhaps a little scared about their bottom line? They do see that there are services that are expensive to provide, and that perhaps they are recognizing that, yes, the systems that we have in place have been there for a long time, and maybe it is time for a review and perhaps a modernization.
There are many ideas in our report that have been floated in the past as a trial balloon or draft legislation, and there's been tremendous pushback by the local government associations. This time around, I'm getting surprisingly little pushback. There's a little bit of pushback on the detail. The devil is always in the details, and we're not suggesting a one-size-fits-all, so my response is, well, let's find a way to make it work. But the answer to your question is we're getting surprisingly little pushback for this. I think the economics of local government service delivery have changed sufficiently that people are saying, let's think about a new way of doing this. Albert Einstein's definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I think a lot of local government officials are saying, we've been doing it this way for almost as long as we've had statehood. It's not sustainable anymore, so maybe it's time to think about a new way of doing it.
Eric Lufer, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Eric Lufer is president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. He joined us from the Michigan Public Radio Network's studios in Lansing. The report, Counties in Michigan, an Exercise in Regional Government from the Citizens Research Council, can be found at crcmich.org. You can also find links to the report and Eric Lufer's recent op-ed columns for Bridge at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. From 1999 through 2012, the Waterfront Film Festival was an annual summer event in Saugatuck. The past few years brought change. In 2013, the festival moved down the coast to South Haven. Then in 2015, a film competition was held in Grand Rapids as part of Art Prize. But the future of the Waterfront Film Festival has become clearer. The nonprofit group announced it is opening a new permanent facility in Holland. Hopwood Dupree is one of the co-founders of the Waterfront Film Festival. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Why did you pick Holland?
Well, four of the five co-founders are from Holland, and so it made a lot of sense with everything that's been happening in that area. We've been looking for a while to make a move to Holland, and this seems like the right time to do it.
This facility had to be kind of rehabilitated. Explain what it was before the Waterfront Film Festival moved in.
That's right, yes. It was a former auto mechanic shop. So we had quite a bit of work to do, but we're keeping the integrity of the building. There are five big bay windows that will roll up in the building. So it'll be sort of an indoor-outdoor unique creative space.
What kind of work did you have to do to get this in shape so it could be a movie theater, amongst other things?
We had, you know, our main challenge was the technical aspect, bringing in a theater involves sound equipment, involves soundproofing areas, and a new lighting grid. The space will be versatile. So we actually will have chairs that are movable. So it's kind of, you know, going to be an event space. It'll, in addition to film screenings, we'll have workshops and seminars there, art showings. You name it, it's really going to be a very multi-purpose.
So you have a permanent facility. How often do you plan to have films shown there?
Right now we're working on the schedule and the calendar. We're really looking toward year-round events, primarily probably in the warmer months, looking at probably launching a summer film series at some point. But, you know, we're really open to partnering with the community and always looking for new exciting hosting, you know, looking to host new and exciting opportunities. And like I said, both films as well as other events and seminars and that type of programming.
But a regular series may mean, you know, once or twice a week. In other words, not just that four-day festival that you had done in the past.
Right. It won't. We're moving away from being a four-day festival and really into offering year-round events. And year-round screening. So like I said, we'll probably really focus on the warmer summertime months, but it's not to say as we grow and expand that we won't be offering wintertime programming as well.
Will you still be looking for the independent films, the sort of things that don't necessarily show up at the big movieplexes?
We're always looking for films that might not otherwise come to the area and always looking for ways to expose people to new opportunities, arts-related in film and art as well. So we're also looking at local angles and supporting local artists, local filmmakers, and also other local nonprofit organizations.
You have a 200-seat theater. Is there the possibility for live performance there?
Certainly. We've had a few people approach us, with just kind of kicking around ideas at this stage, but certainly to accommodate some live performances. We could really focus on doing all sorts of different programming. So we're open to partnering with other groups in the community and open to ideas.
Does this solidify the future of your group to have a permanent facility and a home in West Michigan where you're going to have movies and you're going to have other things as well?
Since the beginning, we've always been looking toward establishing a permanent venue. So this is really exciting for us, exciting for all of our volunteers. And, for a nonprofit organization to have a base like this, it's going to allow us to grow and expand and do all sorts of new, creative, interesting, fun things that we've always dreamed about doing. And now it's a possibility and the options are limitless.
Talk a little bit about some of those other options in terms of, do you see theater classes or those sort of things being conducted at this site?
We're really open to partnering with other groups in the community. So we have spoken to some other nonprofit organizations and some educational institutions about ways we could work together. So we're really open to screenings. We're open to art-related events as well as workshops and seminars. So if people come to us and say, hey, we'd love to use this space for this purpose, we're certainly open to talking and finding new ways to bring more events to the community and to that building.
Does this also open the future for some things that maybe you can't do now, but open some possibilities up down the road? Being in this building, I guess I'm wondering, is there the possibility of expansion? Is there the possibility of reconfiguring the building in some way that that maybe years from now we could be talking about some other things in that site?
Certainly, we are open to really taking it wherever it goes. We'll start with this theater space, but as I said, it's a very versatile space. So I think it's going to kind of take on its own personality and its own mission. And as the organization continues to grow and expand, I think this building will also have its own personality and will lead itself in the way that needs to go. And I think a lot of that will come from input from the community.
So you said that you're kind of moving away from the four-day festival and on into more, if not year-round, more regular events. Do you still plan something, a big splashy sort of thing like the Waterfront Film Festival, several films over a few days or anything like that? Or is that now in the past?
Well, we're certainly still open to it. We're always looking for ways to evolve. And as a nonprofit organization, that's really important to survive. And so we are always looking for new chances to do exciting programming. And I wouldn't say that we'll never do the four-day event again, because who knows, we might. We've had other communities approach us about doing similar types of events. But right now, our plans to do a four-day festival are on hold, and we're really just focusing on this new permanent venue and offering year-round programming.
So I have to ask you then, is the name Waterfront Film Festival a little outdated then? Is there maybe a new title for your organization in the future?
Well, we're keeping the title Waterfront Film Festival now because it is, we look at it as a festival that is year-round and is celebrating the art of film. As well as the arts in general. So, who knows? Maybe it will evolve into something else. But the Waterfront Film Festival carries a name and a brand that I think a lot of people recognize and have enjoyed over the years. So we're sticking with that right now.
Hopwood Dupree, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Hopwood Dupree is the co-founder of the Waterfront Film Festival. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.